The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this very special Signal Hour. Of course, they're all special with Chris Martinson. I'm your host, and with Evie Martinson, as soon as you get your name changed.
Oh, logistics. Dang logistics. Good afternoon, everybody.
You're looking fine today. Nice background, too. Studio's coming along beautifully.
It is. Well. It is. I'm glad to be here with you.
Yes. Glad to be here with everybody. So big, big special day today. We've got to talk about some things. Now, you know, our theme of late has been sort of chronicling, cataloging all the things that are devolving, right? We saw post-COVID, it's almost like some beast got unleashed, right?
Yeah.
Or a mind virus that has taken over that's way worse than the actual COVID virus, which wasn't all that bad when you get right down to it.
Right.
Not nearly as bad as the responses to it, the complete destruction of our constitutional rights, the shutting down of businesses, and the forced mandate with the jabs and all of that. Very bad.
Yeah, we've definitely been chronicling that, and there have been some, at least some things coming out in the news, numbers and data about, you know, how people have fared following those jabs. And I mean, we have been chronicling all the responses.
It's true, but I think the worst of it, I think this mind virus is going to be even worse, and I don't care what we call it. It's some ism from the past, right? But it's some version of what G. Edward Griffin nailed very early on. And at the time, I didn't know what he was talking about 20, 30 years ago. I was like, dude, what are you going on about? These collectivists, he called them, which was sort of his catch-all term. He doesn't care if you call yourself, you know, a national socialist or a communist or any other ist, right?
Right. It's a collectivist.
Collectivist. They believe in the collective thing. They believe in the greater good, right? And we saw that last time with the vaccine thing, this awful, disgusting Dr. Peter Marks saying, well, if we have to kill a few kids, what are you going to do?
It's worth it on balance.
On balance. So today we're going to be discussing these things here. We're a little follow-up from our episode on Wednesday where we discussed a few vaccine things, some follow-up on that, some more crazy Democrats, and of course, Canada's communism problem.
Collectivist. Yeah. We have a communism problem up there in Canada, our northern neighbor. And I'm glad we're getting to this because we didn't quite get to cover it at our last Signal Hour. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yep. Well, thank you, Never Nelly.
Both looking very nice. Thank you so much.
And how about Mike? Mike is, right here we go.
Raring to go. Morning, Chris and Evie.
Yep. And
hi, y'all from Edinburgh, Scotland. Live long and prosper with Peak Prosperity, guys.
Hey, thanks. All right.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks, Philip. And hey, Funky Wanderer. We don't know if we can do this, but we'll try. We'll see. Sometimes, well, Canada, here's the best we can do. First step of the 12-step program is admit you have a problem. So,
yeah, that's right.
We'll start there. And by the way, there is no second Signal Hour live. I pre-recorded something, which is up on the site right now, and it's about the mind virus, 10 symptoms that you have it, because we have to talk about this and catalog it and understand where we're really at so that we can understand you really should plant a garden. You should really get prepared because history is very clear on this, Evie, that over time, when you let the collectivists, whatever ist it is, ism, when they take over, they're exceptionally good at enforcing compliance with their ideologies. They are exceptionally bad at protecting human rights, life, creating prosperity.
Liberties.
That stuff, not so good.
Yeah.
And I'm being kind of polite about that, I guess.
I know.
So let's do a quick vaccine follow-up if we can.
Yeah. Let's check it out.
I thought, so this was, somebody posted, Justice Now posted this in response to our Signal Hour on Twitter. So, and then they reposted Alec Zek's thing. I thought that was great.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing more about this. Alec Zek says, I can't imagine believing the human body was designed so poorly, so inherently broken, and so weak that in order to maintain health, brand new babies need 26 plus injections of man-made concoctions, synthetic chemicals, heavy metals, and animal secretions before they even turn one. Yet I once believed that too. The programming is deep and it takes time to break it. Boy, he's right. It really does.
I think I did. I mean, you just grew up like, oh, you got to go to the doctor, you're going to get injected with stuff. But think about this. I mean, when you sort of break the spell a minute, you're like, whoa, hold on.
I know. Hearing it like that makes it sink in differently, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I think this is an important point. This was a big flip for me, was realizing that I'd been sold a bill of goods. If you want to be healthy, you're going to have to diet, buy some supplements, pay for a gym membership, go to the doctor. There's all this stuff. And if you do all of that and you keep at it, you can stay healthy, but God, it'll fall down.
It's like this unobtainable thing too.
The flip comes when you realize, oh, health is the baseline.
Right.
And anything is off of that is sickness, is off the baseline, right? Health is the baseline. We know this from gardening. Really rich, thick, healthy soils. Those plants are not being munched on by bugs. They don't have spots on the leaves.
Yeah, I guess when you get to that level of optimal health of the soil, nature does tell you what's looking good and what isn't. Yep. Of course, I'd rather eat things that have bug holes in them than not. Hey, that's a little blurry, by the way. Bug holes on them than not, because it means that they're good enough for the insects to eat them. They don't have chemicals or other nasty things in them. So I'll take the bug-eaten kale and...
Well, yeah, if you're buying it at the store, but I mean, in your own garden, you will notice this. I mean, healthy people don't get sick.
Yeah, that's
true. So this is the great thing about COVID, not the great thing, but one of many great things you could observe. Remember there was this whole thing, like, oh, it's everybody's going to get it. 40% of people never got it, never had it.
Is that right?
Yep.
Is that what the numbers are?
Yep, never got it, because either they already had a pre-exposure to a common cold, which was similar enough in its construct that you had antibodies to it, or just their T cells were like up to the task and like, nah, you know, nothing's happening here.
Shoot.
Like there are a bunch of people never had it.
Well, I'm bummed. I thought I came out of that pretty good, but I had COVID twice. So did you.
Yeah, you and me both. I don't think my vitamin D levels were sufficient.
No, as soon as get your vitamin D levels up, folks, this is not a medical advice or anything, but since we've been taking that vitamin D, in addition to getting out in the sunshine, our bodies have been much healthier and we've been really reaping the benefits of that. That hormone is used in absolutely every process in your system. So it's worth it.
Okay.
So, of any vitamins, that's the one I think.
Somebody just said your mic is 20% too hot, which is rare.
Me?
For such a soft talker. So I'm turning you down a tiny bit there. Thanks for
Barry.
The feedback.
All right. I love all these greetings from everybody. Yeah, everybody's saying hello. It's so wonderful.
All right. So now, one of the things that was especially vexing to me was that early on in COVID, I started talking about things like hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, vitamin D. And those things immediately got me banned by YouTube, right? I got strikes, I got shadow banned, all of that stuff. So imagine my exceptional, painful, deep schadenfreude at discovering that Google is going down because AI is just eating its lunch. But who?
Wow.
They're like
this is great.
Yeah.
Okay.
More people, real innovator's dilemma. What do you do if you're Sundar, the CEO, searches 200 billion cash cow?
Wow. All right.
Well, you don't have to read it.
All right.
So it's all right. But I'm happy about this because it couldn't be happening to a nicer bunch of people, right? So Google used to have, they started so fresh, don't be evil was their motto. And then they dropped the don't because they just went to straight be evil, right? And of course, as you remember, the CEO of YouTube at that time was Susan Wojcicki, who ended up dying from turbo cancer.
Nice.
Very aggressive, suddenly diagnosed stage 4 small cell lung carcinoma, which again, maybe that's, there's a lot of that going around with people who
Seems
got
like
too
it.
Many of the immune destroying magic holy jabs
and
all that. But I think this is fantastic. I can't, yay. Google, you deserve it. And bye-bye. And you know, Google is no longer a useful search thing for me. I just don't use it at all anymore.
Yeah.
Like in January, as soon as Grok like evolved into whatever it turned into,
yeah,
separate conversation. now Google's just useless because
you're just it's not finding it as
no, it hides stuff and it's all paid stuff at the top masquerading as news.
Yeah.
It's just garbage at this point.
I
so
know. I'm wondering if other people are finding that to be true as well. Like in the comments, let us know if you're starting to utilize different forms of searching engines, yep. AI. I know some people are getting into Grok, some people are getting into ChatGPT.
Yep.
GPT.
Yep. Hey, Sen, good to see you there. How are you? How's
great.
Oakland going? We'd love to hear from you about that, by the way. And
we got to figure out how to bring people in here live, like to bring their voices in.
Well, we did last time.
I mean, I want to do it just sort of off the cuff sometimes, you know?
Oh, yeah. You know, you can do that on StreamYard. I don't know how to do that. There is a way.
Like where you just click on it and say, come on in, and then they get to have
some
a
kind of
conversation.
A link. I've seen people do it. I don't know how to do it yet because it's a kind of a new platform for us. So, well, but this is, you know, this is what I said. This isn't normal.
No, but it has been normalized.
It has been normalized.
And it's evil. Look at that. That's disgusting. I'm so glad I was born earlier. Mm-hmm. I get to be in that left-hand picture. Thankfully.
That got normalized, though. Look at that. Look at that. When you go to a well child checkup now, well child, the first thing they're like, oh, we're going to have to start giving this your baby, which is fine.
Your healthy baby.
Anything
we got to start
baby?
Jabbing
no,
it up.
No, it's just, you know, it's fine. It's baby. Well, let's jab it up because that's unacceptable. This is totally not normal.
I think that, do you think they're just doing experiments on us? It certainly seems like that sometimes, doesn't it? Like all these shots, they tell us it's for the greater good and blah, blah, blah. But who knows what's in them? Who knows what they're actually experimenting with?
Well, we have plenty of data to suggest it's not good. But this is part of, I know this came up a lot recently because Trump nominated Casey Means to be...
The Attorney General?
No, right? The Surgeon General.
Or Surgeon General, sorry.
Yeah. I don't actually care about the Surgeon General position.
No? You don't feel like it's as important as some of the other appointees?
Nah,
appointments?
I'm never really... The only time I ever remember even thinking about the Surgeon General was, you know, they had the anti-smoking campaign.
On the packs of cigarettes.
Back in the day. But I mean, most recently, this was my favorite moment. I had many favorite moments in COVID. This was one of my faves. The then Surgeon General of the time said, oh, I'm going to show you how to make a mask out of a t-shirt. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
So he folded up and put up a t-shirt and showed you how to do that. But what I loved was they hadn't thought it through, or they had thought it through, that the t-shirt they chose had a saying, a statement on it, which was, got naloxone? Right? We're in the midst of a fentanyl crisis from a lifetime of despair. And the Surgeon General thinks, you know, I need a t-shirt to demonstrate how to make an ineffective, totally useless, stupid mask that simply won't work.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I'll use a got naloxone t-shirt. It's just, it was so...
The irony.
I guess they didn't have a trans right t-shirt that they could have used in the heat of the moment.
Right.
Because it wasn't quite a thing yet. Anyway, yeah, no, that was...
That's just crazy.
Hello, Dr. Chris Martinson here. Look, we've built a world on cheap oil, endless growth, and borrowed time. But the cracks are showing. Inflation's up, resources are thinning, and the old rules don't seem to apply anymore. I've tracked this for years, from the crash course to today, and I'm not here to sugarcoat it. At Peak Prosperity, I'm your information scout, hunting down the facts, cutting through the noise, and showing you how to adapt. This isn't just information, it's a lifeline. The game is changing fast. Are you ready? Subscribe to Peak Prosperity now, and let's get ahead of the curve. Okay, we have to talk about Canada's communist problem. You ready
for Canada.
This?
Yes.
Okay.
Is it going to be disturbing? Is that what you're preparing for?
I have to steal up because anytime I apologize in advance that we're going to play a little bit of Chrystia Freeland. She's talking to U.S. graduates. This is from last year, 2024. I didn't really cotton on to this till just recently, but once I heard it, I said, okay, we're all going to have to listen to this together. So let's listen in.
Our time of tranquility is over. and we are living in an age of change. We're living through what President Biden, on a visit to my country in March, called an inflection point, a time of transformation, he said, that comes once every 5 or 6 generations.
Biden said that, really?
I don't remember him being able to have a thought like that.
No, me neither.
In the recent years. But
he might have said, and she just heard.
She heard what she wanted to in that.
Now, like it or not, you are graduating into that inflection point. And as some of the very best educated people on our planet, you have the rare and precious opportunity to shape it. So what is this inflection point? What is this upheaval which is going to the roots of humanity itself? There are many ways to describe this transformational moment, but I think they all come down to one fundamental question. Does capitalist democracy still work?
So I'd like to speak to graduates in the United States, and I'm going to pose the one fundamental question at the inflection point of history that you are graduating into. Does capitalist democracy still work?
Yikes. That's a scary seed to be planting in the next generation that is not being given an accurate, you know, understanding of history in the first place. Are they? I mean, I don't think our education systems are even up to the task of telling people the truth.
Compared to what? Capitalist democracy compared to
I don't know. I don't know.
Communist democracy?
Yikes. All right, it's a little scary.
Capitalist autocracy? I mean, what is she even talking about? How do you even... I just love how they just set these straw men up, you know?
Yeah.
I have to ask and answer a question. Does capitalist democracy still work?
That's the question being posed around kitchen tables.
Not mine.
Which kitchen tables are those? You know, there aren't really any communist countries left, but if there were, those kitchen tables might be asking that question.
In my country and this one.
Oh, in her country. Sorry, Canada. Oh, Canada.
As parents wonder if our children can count on capitalist democracy's essential promise of a future more prosperous than our present? It is the question being posed in the muddy and bloodied trenches of Bakhmut as Ukraine's brave Democrats resist the invading forces of Putin's dictatorship.
Putin's. She made it sound like a tasty
French fries with gravy.
Gravy dish, but...
Well, it's funny how she called them Democrats over there. It's like our men and women. I don't know. I don't know how she, why she did that.
The famous democracy of Ukraine, you know, where they don't have elections and you're not allowed to, no freedom of religion or speech. You can't speak certain languages.
Right.
That
one where you get abducted off the street to get pushed into a position of fighting in a war that you don't want to.
Yeah.
That one.
I mean, mad props to the cameraman for panning the audience who are just like, you know, just waving. All right, let's see if she carries on. Let's see if she can land this plane on the ship, though.
And it is the question being posed by our shrinking glaciers and our...
Oh, those glaciers. You know how they pose those questions. That's what I heard at the Glacier National Park. Can a capitalist democracy deliver a more prosperous future?
Warming oceans, which are asking us wordlessly but emphatically... if democratic societies can rise to the existential challenge of climate change.
Okay, so here she is. She is openly advocating that we have to dispense with capitalism and democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what we've seen in Canada and other places, this is not... This
in the
is
UK?
Not, I mean, we're making light of it, and I kind of have to defensively to bear it, but...
That's important for people to know.
This is crazy time. This is the kind of wackadoodle stuff you hear right before really bad things happen in history. People who've risen through the ranks of power are comfortable enough to say the quiet part out loud. It's like, I don't know if that democracy you have is... I don't think you can keep it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to try something else.
She's warning us, isn't she?
Mm-hmm. With her little sing-songy... It's like she's addressing, you know, 5-year-olds. You know?
Yeah.
But look at that hand gesture. But this is like right out in the open. Democracy can't work. Isn't that, that's mm-hmm. pretty, that's, it's really astonishing when you think through what's actually being said, that you would say, you know, I'm going to go deliver a keynote address, a commencement address to a bunch of new graduates. I'm going to have to say something really inspiring, something I think will resonate with them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to land upon them with this idea that this thing they grew up with called democracy isn't working anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's the
glaciers.
Which
is a big ask of them. And who knows what she really means.
I think, well, we all know
now,
what she means.
These are, of course, huge and fundamental challenges. I'm not here to counsel despair or retreat. Yeats famously said of another generation that came of age in a liminal moment that the best lacked all conviction, while the worst were full of passionate intensity.
You know what's ironic about that is
our
he was talking about her. That's literally Yeats wrote that line for her. 100%.
I know.
The worst are full of passionate intensity, right?
Oh, it's insane. She's nuts.
She is nuts.
Certifiably nuts. I'm sorry. Are you looking at the comments over there?
I was a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's getting harder and harder to bite my tongue about the socio-demographic cohort that she occupies.
That she represents?
Yes.
You don't have to bite your tongue, do you? Who cares? Say it. Be you. Bring your opinions out into the world. What
All
else
right.
are we doing here?
I'm painting with a broad brush. I don't mean to impugn everybody, but basically liberal white ladies are increasingly scaring me a lot.
Yeah.
As a cohort. Mm-hmm. They have like some channeled intensity that's bizarre, and I don't quite understand it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But she's
doesn't
she's
seem a... like it's based in logic and data or fundamental things that we can all agree on.
This is a gleeful camp guard right here, right? This is an HR manager, right?
I think you're right.
So I just wanted to talk through this because, of course, you know, she talked about climate change. This is like the existential thing. So let's just review. Let's review. It's terrible news, Evie, because look what's happening.
Europe is world's fastest warming continent with record temperatures in 2024.
Yep. Europe's fastest warming. So we got to take this seriously because,
wait a minute. Asia is warming faster, hit hardest by climate disasters.
No, Asia's warming faster. So we have two fastests, right?
Okay.
Two number ones. That's good. But hold on.
The U.S. is warming 60% faster than the world is. National Climate Assessment says we are not prepared for what's coming.
Well, hold on.
Africa endures more severe warming than elsewhere, posing risk of conflict. Wow.
It's a Lake Wobegon situation. Everybody's above average.
Oh, that was such a good show back in the day.
Yeah, and so I got that all from a Simon Godek's thing. You can see at Godekall on there.
Yep,
so that's Simon Godek.
Simon's
friend.
Great.
Wow.
All right.
I can't guarantee. I think this is real, but with AI these days, we don't know anymore. I would like to believe that what we just saw from Christian Freeland and this isn't real. Maybe it's not, but I think this is what he means to say.
Climate change threatens to irreversibly harm our natural environment. Only by fighting climate change can we protect our natural environment. And only by protecting our natural environment can we protect ourselves, our planet, our future from the threat of climate change. So globally, Canada will work to establish international standards for voluntary carbon markets. That will allow those who choose to protect and conserve our environment in order to fight climate change to be compensated for doing so. We understand that values determine value. Compensated for doing so.
Listen to this
part. Environment in order to fight climate change to be compensated for doing so.
So to be compensated. So this is a banker. Mark Carney's a banker, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's saying, you know how we fight climate change? We set up markets. And therefore, those who fight climate change are compensated for doing so. So we've aligned.
And you called it voluntary, but
so
I don't know.
What this ultimately turns into is just a giant grift, because it's bankers, and bankers are going to bank, right? That's what bankers do. Bankers bank.
Mm-hmm.
They just steal from everybody. It's what they do. Nothing personal. Mm-hmm. It's the scorpion and the frog.
Skim a little off the top.
Yep. Just stab the frog. Why'd you stab me? I'm a scorpion, right? It's that whole story. So that's what they're going to do. So his idea is, oh, you know what? We need bankers. The bankers are going to need to get a little taste. They're going to a little something, something. A little big.
Yeah. He's trying to incentivize people, I guess.
And that will mean, of course, in the pyramid scam scheme of banking, lots and lots of little people are going to have to pay. There'll be little things on
like
your bills.
Fees.
Here's my climate bill fee. It'll just be all these fees and stuff that ultimately aggregate into giant lakefront mansions for a couple of people.
You're right.
Because that's how it works.
That is how it'll work, isn't it?
That's exactly how it's going to work. But I just want to point this out. Okay.
All right.
So first, let's just remember this. I'm so glad we dodged we didn't dodge a bullet. We dodged a tank shell. Getting the Build Back Better crew out of there. It's this WF mindset, right? And so just remember.
Mm-hmm. President Joe Biden and I are clear. All our work to address the climate crisis must be grounded in environmental justice and equity.
Equity. So that's Kamala Harris. Equity.
That's interesting.
It has to be grounded in equity. That's a weird thing. What if
202,308 Albertans just backed a separation petition enough to force a referendum. The issue is now headed to a province-wide vote. Big moves coming out of Alberta.
So Alberta's took one look at all that Canadian stuff. They're like, peace out. They just like put their money on the table. We're out.
We're out. You
know? And we'll see where this goes. It's still up in flux, but immediately lots of people like, we don't want any part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Mark Carney is not speaking for all of Canada and Canadians. He's speaking for a very tiny liberal elite.
Right.
Who are most interested. Like, Canada has deep problems right now. One of the most indebted nations on a household basis. They've got some of the most unaffordable housing anywhere in the world. And he's saying, you know what we need? Some carbon taxes on top of all that.
Right. Right.
That's what our people need here.
And we need to talk about fighting climate change, which, you know, that's really talking about the 1% having their, you know, golf clubs and their places that they want to go. And taking that land away from people that are trying to farm it and do other important things with it.
Exactly. So here, Evie, I think we gotta bring in our Ragnar. Always bring in your Ragnars.
Ragnar says warmer climates historically lead to periods of prosperity. This is antithetical to the anti-human crowd.
So let's be clear about this. If right now you said choose 3 degrees warmer or 3 degrees colder,
mm-hmm.
I would choose warmer instantly. Mm-hmm. 3 degrees colder is like mass starvation and famine and death for the world.
Wow. Wow.
Instantly. Like that's a lot.
So scientifically it has a bigger impact if it's getting
failures,
cooler.
All of that stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yep.
That makes sense.
So that's true. Let me see what this piece here is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alberta separation. Albertans have the least per capita political representation in Canada.
And that's it. That's all we need to know about this. But look at, let me see if I can, oh no.
And they pay the most
per
capita to the Confederation.
So a riding, like a congressional district, you know, per riding.
Uh-huh.
Poor Alberta has to cough up 125,000 people to get one of those ridings compared to, say, the Nunavut at 36,000, Prince Edward Island at 38,000. You know,
Yukon
are very, very sparsely settled areas, right? So obviously they would get more representation. But the idea that Ontario deserves, in Quebec, you know, mm-hmm. deserve to have a higher sort of representation than Alberta, which is the engine of the country because it makes most of the oil and gas,
right?
Which is the true prosperity,
right,
of this. And just as a quick reminder, if Alberta was its own country, and you look at oil production per capita per citizen in 2025, Alberta would be the wealthiest country on the planet. Absolutely. I mean, more wealthier than Kuwait, Qatar, Norway, UAE, Saudi Arabia by far. Right? Because the next closest is Kuwait at 0.72 barrels per citizen per day, Qatar at 0.685, Norway only at 0.375, very wealthy country, Saudi Arabia at 0.28, Alberta is 0.885.
Wow.
Right.
That's amazing.
So I had a vision, like if Canada really, if Canada, you know, really had that, this is what it would look like up in Canada, you know, be amazing, be all tricked out.
Didn't you show this the other day?
I did. but I mean, back to this thing that we have to talk about, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Calgary, only 3% of the housing market's considered affordable. 3%. Mm-hmm.
And the city needs to add 2,000 to 2,500 affordable housing units annually for 6 years to meet the national average of 4.3% affordable housing stock. But it's only adding about 400 units per year.
Yeah, that's to get up to the national miserable average where 95.7% of our houses are unaffordable.
Well, what about the migrants?
Only 4.3%. Oh, and they're bringing migrants in.
Migrants coming in and taking a lot of those units, I'm sure.
Yep. So here's what it comes down to then, Evie, mm-hmm. This is just insane to me.
Time is running out to make this transition to net zero, to have a sustainable world. We need to transition the energy system on the scale of the Industrial Revolution at the speed of the digital transformation. In order to do that, we're going to need a fundamental transformation, really a revolution in the financial system. And I'd say that revolution started really in earnest with COP26 2 years ago. Only $5 trillion in the financial system was explicitly committed to net zero. That number grew to $130 trillion. That's 40% of global financial assets. Global financial institutions can play a number of roles to help economies in the transition. First, the most obvious is to get money, to get capital to those companies that have plans to get their emissions down. And so part of that is, I'd say, the easy bit, which is to build new renewable power, wind, solar, soon at great scale, hydrogen, also hydroelectric, and in some cases, nuclear. But the more complex part is finding those companies in industries that have high emissions. Think of the steel industry, aviation, much of manufacturing. And finding those companies that have plans, that have to make big investments to get those emissions down. To put a number around it, it's an extra $2.5 to $3 trillion a year of additional finance that we have to find in order to get those emissions down. But that's not all that finance can do. What finance has to do as well is to provide capital for the adaptation of our economies.
So it's this capital idea. So it all sounds good, but then you peel it back and you say, wait a minute. So by spending more money,
mm-hmm.
what we're going to spend our way to
we
a
get
better
somewhere
outcome,
better.
Isn't the spending that gets us in trouble in the first place? Because when we spend money, you know what happens? People buy more stuff with that money. That's the whole thing.
Right.
So, but we could make our companies more efficient. Well, companies already want to be efficient, right? Because that's just part mm-hmm. of business. If you mm-hmm. can not spend a lot of money, then you don't.
I mean, there are a lot of really bad things going on with companies like Amazon and some of the bigger corporations. They have terrible, you know, processes that they follow in terms of they greenwash and try to make it sound like they care and that all their products are somehow, you know, because you get your Amazon products both together on the same day, you're saving something, and maybe you know, in some small way it all matters. But I do think that there's a lot of waste in the world.
But
I just don't know that this is the right
direction. Like, yeah. If you're really worried about climate change, let me just take their argument at face value. Mm-hmm. Mark Carney, I actually believe in my heart of hearts, I've looked at the science, and I believe that carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, that's the issue.
That's the worst thing ever.
The first thing, his first instinct is, oh, we're going to have to find a way to have capital markets tax the heck out of everybody.
Right.
Because when they have a carbon tax at $170 a ton, which is what they're proposing, that goes right onto your heating bill, your mm-hmm. electric bill, your fuel tax, right? It's just right there. It's going to be there instantly. That'll happen easy. Remember our easy hard framework?
Yeah.
What's going to be easy? Slapping that onto a consumer's bill.
Right.
What's going to be hard? Figuring out how to tell your friends at Davos that they shouldn't fly private jets everywhere.
Right.
They'll find that
you're right.
Hard. They won't have that won't have that conversation because that would be uncomfortable. Taxing little people, easy peasy.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, that's what this feels like, honestly. It doesn't feel like it's let's come together as a people and find some ideas about how we're going to preserve this beautiful world for our great grandchildren. Right. It doesn't feel like we need to address this. It feels more like we're going to do this to you and make these decisions because we've already decided that these are the thing. Like, it doesn't feel very inclusive in terms of ideas, does it?
Well, no, and it's incoherent, and we can all feel that. It sounds good, but it's kind of like we just tried to fill ourselves up on just plain popcorn, right? Mm-hmm. Something was unsatisfying about that. Mm-hmm. You can't solve this with like putting extra fees on capital markets because raccoons are going to raccoon, right?
Yeah.
And Wall Street's just going to find a way to take its fair share of that whole thing. And next thing you know, billions went to that enterprise of making sure Wall Street was fat and happy. You know what Wall Street does with it? They buy mega yachts, hookers, and blow. Right. That's all they do. It's who they are. They're very honest about that, you know?
Right. And that does not help climate change.
Not help climate change much, you could say. But this is the mysterious part. Why is Carney completely silent about China? So this is annual CO2 emissions. We've taken him at face value. He really cares about CO2 emissions. And his response is, I'm going to slap taxes on these people. And I'm going to be completely silent about China, who, by the way, owns Canada lock, stock, and barrel.
That is weird.
China has a lot of power in Canada at this point in time.
Does it own a lot of
their infrastructure? So how do you not say anything about that? It's like, oh, you know, we need more gas taxes in a carbon market. That will start to solve stuff. It's just a grift at this point in time. If you really believe in something and it's existential and you're going to force people into penurious, ruinous actions, then you should be honest about it. Like, you should be willing to talk about China in private jets and mega yachts.
Right. Right. You should be. It's true.
So
is China trying to, I mean, I always want to understand what's going on underneath all of this, but is it China own Canada in such a way that, I mean, China's in charge of the situation and they're going to take over eventually Canada?
Probably. I mean, they kind of own the West Coast, you know, Vancouver, all that, but. I mean, they have a lot of influence, and I won't begrudge how China operates kind of above board. I mean, they're not hiding it. They come in with lots of money and they do trade deals, and that's kind of how they operate. But at the same time, the fact that they're just so silent. I mean, this always caught me. Remember when we had the Stop Oil protesters and they're throwing paint on Van Gogh's and gluing their hands to the roadway to stop ordinary people from driving to work? The whole time I'm like, why isn't anybody gluing their hand to the Chinese embassy? Because it's the obvious thing to do.
It's true.
Not
you're
one
really
of those
be
protesters,
upset.
And this is controlled opposition. These kids were whooped up and told to go glue their hands to the A4 motorway, not the Chinese embassy. Nobody mentioned that because this is not organic. All of this stuff is not organic. So for Mark Carney to say, you know what we need? Like here, if Mark Carney thought, you know, and I would agree with him, incentives lead to outcomes. He's saying, if we tax carbon, that will lead to the right outcomes. Like, no, because we print money into existence and we just distribute it to the super wealthy.
Right.
So who, they don't care if taxes are 170 a ton or 1700 a ton. Who cares?
That's true.
They have billions that amplify that they can't even spend.
It's monopoly money to them.
So here's what you would do instead. If you were really actually thoughtful and caring, Mark Carney, listen up. This is easy. You know what you do? You say, everybody, I don't care how rich or poor you are, everybody gets a booklet or electronic equivalent. You only get to burn X gallon equivalents of gasoline in a year, or kilowatt hours of energy. That's it. Whether you consume it as electricity or petrol, your choice. And that's it. Everybody gets a booklet. And that's it. That's your allotment for the year. Full stop. So now that poor billionaire with their 400-foot yacht is going to have to go out to all the poor schlubs out there and start buying their booklets from them in order to be able to fuel up their monstrosity.
Mm-hmm.
Now that would level the playing field. That would be fair. That would give you your vaunted equity. That would work from an incentive standpoint, but they'll never propose that because that's not the point of this whole thing.
Yeah. What is the point of this whole thing? What do you think?
To immiserate, it's to break the population. I truly think that this program is about humiliating us.
Mm-hmm.
And getting us demoralized and defeated
because
I don't know why they hate us, but they do.
Yeah, they're trying to dismantle the West and our culture and our way of life and the freedom that we have to do what we choose to do.
I think to break us spiritually.
Yeah, it does seem that way.
The way I look at it.
It does. There's some good comments over there if you want to check them out. Homo sapiens.
Which one?
Right there.
This one. Yeah.
It's not that rich people are more evil than poor people. The problem is that too many people are naive about entropy and also now want to believe in some kind of inclusive outcome.
It's very true. We have a disturbing lack of understanding of physics, basic physics, entropy being a physics term. More entropy, positive entropy, is more disorder. Negative entropy is more order. And there are no negative entropy systems that humans have devised so far. Nature does negative entropy, creates diffuse sunlight and turns it into tasty peaches on a tree. It concentrates the sunlight. But we don't do that. We're just dissipative machines, and we're dissipating all our primary energy extraordinarily quickly. But speaking of this demoralization routine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, all right. Viva has something to say about that. This is at a press conference about two missing Nova Scotian children. The police chief starts off with a land acknowledgement. She then proceeds to acknowledge that African Nova Scotians are a distinct people. Canada is not a serious country anymore, and the people are suffering the consequences.
This is a press conference. There's two missing children. They've been missing for a number of days at this point in time. It's you know, a lot of attention on this case.
It's awful. Are they brother and sister?
Mm-hmm.
Good afternoon. I am Corporal Carly McCann, Provincial Public Information Officer for the Nova Scotia RCMP. Thank you all for being here today. Bonjour, je suis la Caporale Carly McCann, agent d'information publique pour la GRC en Nouvelle-Écosse. Merci de votre présence aujourd'hui. First, I acknowledge that we are in Mi'kma'ki, the traditional and unceded ancestral territory of the Mi'kmaq people. I also recognize that African Nova Scotians are a distinct people whose histories, legacies, and contributions have enriched that part of Mi'kma'ki known as Nova Scotia for over 400 years.
Okay, so you're the parents, right? And this is like you're frantic and you're counting on the police to sort of have their S together. And then
they start talking about this.
They've clearly prioritized, you know, here's our priorities. We have to make sure that we.
Right. I mean, this is obviously just a clip, right? There must be more.
I mean, there's more after that, but this is how she started, right? And I have to confess total ignorance. I had no idea that African Nova Scotians was like a big was a thing to say. I got to lead off with that.
That is kind of interesting. Is it because that wherever they're looking for them is on that, it's on their land?
No.
Huh.
Not particularly.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. That's so terrible. I hope they find those babies.
Yeah. Who knows?
Awful. Welcome to Canada, where the government gives you free drugs that might kill you, but they want to ban health supplements. Is that right?
Well, they came with warnings at the bottom, you know?
What? Actually give these out?
Well, you know, you have to buy them.
You buy them at like a store? Like
look
you at cocaine,
would
weed
3.5
or something?
3.5 grams, 100% pure. That's an 8-ball. No cut, no buff. Like, it's just pure.
What? They're manufacturing this and selling it in Canada, but they won't let you take vitamins
or raw milk. You can't do that stuff.
Oh my goodness,
you can't do that.
What?
So again, though, I mean, the messaging around all of this, right? The things that are illegal. There are doctors I know up there who lost their licenses because they said, hey, why don't you try this completely safe medication instead of this mandated jabby thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Why don't you try this ivermectin?
Why don't you try that?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy time. So, here's where it gets, I think, just okay. We got to talk about the MAID program, which is medically assisted dying.
Yeah.
Right?
No, you're not. This is a Canadian cull. That's what this is.
Culling.
Yes, culling. You know, listen, MAID is actually an amendment to the Criminal Code of Canada that says that doctors and nurse practitioners can non-culpably homicide their patients, period. Right?
Non-culpably homicide their patients. It's in the code. It's in the legal code.
Homicide their patient.
Non-culpably homicide.
Wow. So not be in trouble for it. Wow.
That's right. And they push it down onto the provinces. And because healthcare in Canada is a provincial jurisdiction, according to our constitution.
Okay.
they said now the provinces can, you know, get this whole thing going. And that's what we've seen. So the province where I live, British Columbia, they just attack this with an alacrity, with an enthusiasm. And, you know, I now, look, I'm not a doctor or a nurse.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm a patient.
All right.
I'm a cancer survivor.
Okay.
Thanks be to God.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I was a patient at the Delta Hospice Society going through my cancer journey. And when I got to good health, I joined the board of directors just at the time when they were pushing MAID down onto everybody who gets public money.
Okay. Right? So any company that gets public money.
Anywhere. Well, it's a public healthcare system. Okay. Everybody gets public money.
So, so everyone's right. on it.
Everybody's getting public money. Right?
So it's everybody.
It's everybody.
Wow.
So we did have a public partnership, public-private partnership with the Fraser Health Authority.
Okay.
And we were told in our hospice. So I became the president of the Delta Hospice Society. And we were told because we had a hospice that we operated, a facility that we actually built. We fundraised $8 million. We built it. We got a land lease for 35 years. We built those buildings on it. We were told that if we want money, we're going to have to start killing our patients. And we said, well, we're not killing our patients. We're palliative care. We don't do that.
Right. The whole point is to just ease the suffering as they go through this experience.
Live well.
Life. Yeah.
Until your natural end, which right. we can help you with.
Yeah.
Right. And so they said, well, you're not getting any more money. And we said, that's fine. We don't want your money and we don't need your money.
Wow. Okay.
Right. So yeah. we're sitting on this land with our buildings. Mm-hmm. So we had 25 years left on that land lease. So as soon as we started to resist and be defiant, not get into lockstep, they canceled that lease with 25 years left.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
They evicted us from our buildings, took our money away,
yep.
and basically took our facility from us, kicked us off the land and expropriated those buildings, $8.5 million worth. And to the government. So wow. the government walked in, started to operate our hospice with us gone and provide euthanasia there.
That is absolutely outrageous. And it does fit into this model we're seeing where they will shut down a bank account. They go against the lease that's been signed. What good is a lease if it doesn't, you know, protect the property for the, and you've invested that funding and money in there knowing you're going to be there for a period of time, and all just because you're like, we're not going to offer death as one of the options in our hospice.
That's right. So you are now compelled.
Compelled.
You see, and this kind of MAID, right, is a conquest and then compel. That's the dance. That's the modus operandi that they're using, and that's going to be facilitated by the court system, by the judiciary.
Yeah.
Right? And all of our courts and our judges are appointed in Canada, appointed by the government.
Yeah. So the government is controlling the whole thing.
Who signs their paychecks. So get that, in 2016, it's legalized
mm-hmm.
with non-culpable homicide, expanded in 2021 then to include non-terminal conditions. And I didn't realize how bad it gotten. In 2023, it accounted for 4.7% of all Canadian deaths. Were people who were euthanized.
15,000 people.
15,343 people.
Oh my gosh.
Not 3 or 10, or there's a few extreme cases.
Well, look at what it says in the bottom here. Critics like Ireland argue it targets the sick, disabled, and poor, offering death as a solution to inadequate social support, which I think is a huge part of what's going on. That and a ridiculous waiting list to get any medical procedures done.
Well, it was it was closing in on a year ago, but maybe not quite a year ago. I and again, tongue in cheek, I was like, this can't be true. But there was this case of this woman who's she's paralyzed, she's in a wheelchair, but she's a Paralympian, she's an athlete, and she had just been writing letters saying to her national candidate, she's Canadian, her national health thing, like saying, hey, you guys, I need a ramp on my house, that would make my life easier, and you've been promising me a ramp. So she just kept writing letters, right, like, where's my ramp? And it takes forever to get things done in the Canadian system. And they came back to her and they said, we can't do the ramp, but we can offer you MAID. They literally, she posted the letter on Twitter. She said, they offered me death because I was like being too much of a squeak wheel. They're like, we can't do a ramp. She, you know.
Oh my God.
I guess you're in a wheelchair. Let's just kill you.
That's so bad.
This is institutionalized. Like, this is how bad it's gotten in Canada that this has been normalized. This is evil, right? When you normalize all those jabs into kids,
right?
When you normalize like having no border that's of any utility whatsoever, when you normalize that it's very, very hard to get illegal people back out of your country, when you normalize killing people as a first order of business.
Wow. Wow. And imagine how scary it would be to be a citizen there and you go into the hospital for some random thing. I mean, God forbid you go in there unconscious and they just decide to pull the plug on you. I mean, oh, I was scared enough after COVID happened to not want to go to the hospital for any reason. But this is terrifying.
One more reason.
Wow. Oh, I'm sorry.
I mean,
Canada.
This is really, it's such a slippery slope, and they're on it, of course, right?
Yeah, they are. Oh, yeah. What do you do about that? I mean, it sounds like that woman tried to push back and she just got buried. I mean, that's just what they do.
I can't believe what they happened here. They expropriated their facility, turned it into a place for euthanasia. They just said, no, no, not for us. It's not just like, hey, we have a government program that you can utilize. It's like, we're going to insist that you use this government program.
That's right.
To euthanize people. This is a pretty intense decision to make, right? But again, this is the whole part of the cult, this ism, the totalitarian, the individual rights don't matter. It's about what's good for the collective rights, you know, as they exist. So they made the collective decision that it's better to kill these weak people than keep them around, because we might need that money for an indigenous person. Chris, what would you rather have? Keep this person alive for a few more weeks in their bed, or feed this poor, starving Nova Scotian black child?
Right. Well, didn't they have something? Was it Canada as well that had something where it had to do with retirement and funds that your family would get if you chose the MAID program? Wasn't there something around that where, like,
well, that was in the UK?
It was the UK.
The UK, and we have to talk about crazy Democrats in our remaining time here. But because I got off track with all of that. But yes, in the UK, they said, oh, you know, if you die one day after the age of 75, your entire benefits just disappear into the system. They get absorbed back in. But if you died a day before, those benefits would pass on to your family, your children, your grandchildren, your heirs.
I bet that's going to be visiting Canada,
too. You show me the incentive, I'll show you the outcome. There's going to be a lot of people dying at 74 years and 363 days. You know, it's just going to happen.
Ugh.
All right, we're going to talk about crazy Democrats in the time we have remaining. Okay. This was astonishing to me. So Kash Patel, by the way, jury's still out for me on Kash.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for, please, can you arrest somebody of consequence here? Right?
I know.
Please. But at any rate, this is a separate story. This is different. So here he is. He's just, this is a budget meeting, and he's got his usual wide-eyed look, but he's up in front of this
agency
lady.
I was an impeachment manager for President Trump's second impeachment. It was a sad, solemn duty. And so I wanted to ask you about that. Mr. Patel, as you and the president continue to weaponize and investigate his perceived enemies, as you follow this blueprint, when can I, a former impeachment manager, expect the FBI at my door?
Ma'am, you want to know who was targeted by a weaponized FBI? Me. You want to know how and why?
Well,
you want to know what I'm doing to fix it?
Let me move on.
Well, you should read the book, because there's no enemies list on that book. There are people that violated their constitutional obligations and their duties to the American people. And they were rightly called out. And you should give that book to every one of your constituents so they can read about it.
I won't be doing that.
I won't be doing that.
It's their loss.
During your Senate confirmation hearings, you repeatedly denied having any involvement as a private citizen in the firing of FBI officials who engaged in the prosecution against January 6th insurrectionists, the violent rioters who beat and killed Capitol Police officers.
What? That's not accurate.
Ooh, hold up. Let's listen to that again.
Against January 6th insurrectionists, the violent rioters who beat and killed Capitol Police officers.
They didn't do that. That's not true.
We're going to have to get a fact check on that. Grok, how many? Oh, none many.
No police officers. I knew it. Were beaten to death by protesters or anyone else during the January 6th, 2021 attack.
You can't have completely different facts that are that factual, right? You can't. You just can't. You just can't. That's like saying, Chris, as we all know, our atmosphere is made up of 92% kryptonite. I'm like, no, it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know what? This is the crazy that's happening.
You can't
have
different facts like this. That's how crazy the Democrats are. I mean, she believes that. Did you see her face? It was all screwed up. She's like,
oh, yeah.
She's like, who beat and killed the January 6th protesters? It was like this really, like, she's really angry about
these
cops were beaten to death by the protesters. And it's not true.
It isn't true. But this is the problem with our news agencies being turned into propaganda machines.
Mm-hmm.
There's an entire half of the country that buys into that BS that doesn't have the true facts, and they don't care because they get triggered and they end the conversation before you can even say anything.
Exactly.
It's so frustrating. I hate that.
I do too, but let's move on because we got to move on from that little weird interchange. So Senator Chris Larson, I don't know where he's from. I forget where he's from. Anyway, okay. Senator
says an underreported detail of Judge Hannah Dugan's arrest at her workplace by federal agents is the fact that she was handcuffed and photographed and later shackled and placed in a holding cell ahead of her initial court appearance. Not only is this extremely abnormal, it was entirely unnecessary. A sitting judge with no history of breaking the law is not a flight risk.
Well, I hate the hypocrisy. I'm a Virgo. I hate it. But Senator Chris Larson here is like, oh, this is totally inappropriate. Like, no. Actually, when people get arrested, this happens to people every day. This
right.
would be called ordinary and usual. What's unusual is like, oh, but when they're part of my team, I expect them to get deferential treatment. I expect two-tier justice. The sitting judge should no history of not a flight risk. And how were the January 6th people who were just ordinary citizens prior to that day? Most of them.
They were treated like that
and worse, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there it is. That's what it looked like. They actually gave her two sets of cuffs because it was a little just to make it easy. So she didn't have to like bend her arms back there and all that.
So it's not even how people are usually arrested.
All right. But somebody who's really not a flight risk, somebody who was part of the government, somebody who's getting arrested, remember Roger Stone? CNN, they bang on his door at 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow CNN is there with them within an exclusive. So it's like, Senator Larson's like, oh, that would be so terrible if, you know, that's just, they just did that. He arrested her workplace to embarrass her. And this is really upsetting to him. But then what the heck is this?
Exclusive CNN video. This is what happened this morning before sunrise, just before 6 a.m., when Roger Stone, longtime Trump associate and advisor, was taken into custody by the FBI. There's a moment of audio on here that I want to play for everyone, because this is what first sounds that Roger Stone woke up to this morning was the FBI pounding on his door and shouting this. I want to just play this for a moment.
FBI, open the door.
And you point out that when the second time when they say FBI warrant, you'd like to know if that meant search warrant or arrest warrant.
I mean, it's clear there's an arrest warrant because he's been indicted. And the question I think is, did they serve another warrant, a search warrant at the same time?
So, I mean, the normal thing you do in a case like this is because, you know, obviously being investigated and all that stuff. I get it. Normal thing you do is you call up the lawyer and you say, hey, we're about to file charges. You want to bring him in? And then you go in. And then they process you and you
and
do all that stuff.
And they tell you it's about to happen. So you have a choice, right?
Well, they don't show up banging on your door at 6 a.m. with all those guns drawn, which could obviously lead to some sort of an accident. You know?
Oh, so bad.
Anyhow.
Gosh. You know, we'll know that.
So Larson doesn't care about that.
No.
And went into the house and spent time there. The answer will be probably yes. If they all left when they took Stone out, then the answer is probably no.
Hang on 1 second, David. You've also been pouring through this. And just so people know maybe why the FBI showed up in force, they allege high level obstruction here by Roger Stone.
They're alleging high level obstruction. You know why they showed up in force? There was obstruction. That is like one of the most chumpy of the chump charges out there, right? But high level, They're alleging high level.
Since he went to lie and deceive and to dodge and to tamper, according to this indictment,
is extraordinary.
Joining us now is CNN producer David Shortell. He was on the scene when this
happened. Breathless there.
In
oh
Fort Lauderdale. Tell us everything.
Oh, she's so excited. Tell us by this.
Everything. She is. She's getting wet. It's just awful. So what exactly did Dugan do then? So like, okay, this judge is arrested. The left is all upset because, oh my God, she's been treated so inappropriately. Mm-hmm. Here's Pam Bondi explaining.
So rare for victims to want to cooperate. They wanted to cooperate. They were sitting in the courtroom with the state prosecutor. The judge learns that ICE was outside to get the guy because he had been deported in 2013, came back in our country, commits these crimes, charged with committing these crimes, victims in court. Judge finds out. She goes out in the hallway, screams at the immigration officers. She's furious, visibly shaken, upset, sends them off to talk to the chief judge. She comes back in the courtroom. You're not going to believe this. Takes the defendant and the defense attorney back in her chambers, takes them out of private exit and tells them to leave. While a state prosecutor and victims of domestic violence are sitting in the courtroom.
Wow.
You know,
this is a guy, he's in court for another violent act. He's already been deported before and he's back in the country illegally and he's in court for a violent act. And this judge screams out again, white liberal lady, yells at ICE and then helps the guy escape, knowing that he's there on a federal arrest warrant for deportation.
And he has victims federal. In there.
Yes.
Like sitting there.
She cares more about the principle of it than the victims, right? Or whatever.
Oh, right.
By the way, I will note that she also was charged with obstructing. So I guess it's okay. Maybe she's lucky. She
it was not as serious.
Lucky that she wasn't like arrested at 6 a.m. in her literal underwear. Like Roger Stone was arrested in his underwhere. Right?
Totally trying to punish him.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it goes on. Don't forget Peter Navarro. Again, this is a Trump cabinet member.
Mm-hmm.
And they arrested him at the airport. They put him in handcuffs and leg irons and put him in a cell again. Wow. And this is for contempt of Congress for defying a January 6th committee subpoena, right? Do you know how many people have defied Congress's congressional subpoenas because they're a joke, right?
A lot of them, I think.
I could name a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
James Clapper.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Tons There's some people that just Hillary never bothered Clinton. To respond.
Anyway, it's rules for me, you know, not for thee, or vice versa. Rules for thee, not for me. But
Android over there says civil wars are no longer unfathomable.
Well, they're not. And we should really talk about that.
Because sadly, I think that's where we're kind of at.
Well, the first step of a civil war is you have a separation where your Venn diagrams don't overlap anymore. There's some principle.
Mm.
That you just can't come to terms around something.
Yeah, you
right?
can't get over it.
Can't get over it.
Yeah.
And we are now mentally, ideologically, emotionally separated from each other. Like whatever that judge was in that judge's head, she feels, I guarantee you, and she's got a bunch of people who think she was doing the right thing and they're proud of her for being so brave and standing up to this horror.
What courage you have.
What courage. Meanwhile, Trump barely has 100,000 people deported so far. And already there's been like 70, 80 court actions around this whole thing.
Right.
Obama, he deported 10, 11 million people.
Million.
Every president deports millions and millions. Under any given presidency, millions of people are deported. It's just part of the game. Right. Always has been. But now it's really, really unacceptable.
That's crazy.
Is it? By the way, we have to do a quick progress report here.
All right. Let's go quick.
Very quick.
Oh, Nicole Shanahan. She says, yes, it's very strange. Doesn't make any sense. I was promised that if I supported RFK Jr. in his Senate confirmation, that neither of these siblings would be working under HHS or in an appointment, and that people much more qualified would be. I don't know if RFK very clearly lied to me or what is going on. It has been clear in recent conversations that he is reporting to someone regularly who is controlling his decisions. And it isn't President Trump.
Hmm. He's being controlled by somebody who isn't President Trump.
Hmm.
We're getting those vague coded symbols.
I know.
It says, you know, there's something going on here that they don't like. But that has been People have openly questioned and said, hey, what happened? Right. Like what happened to Cash? What happened to Pam Bondi? Right. What happened to RFK? Like something happens. Mr. Smith goes to Washington.
Yeah. Yep.
And the evil Borg kind of does what it does. And
those people aren't the same, or they don't act with the same integrity that they came into the office with.
Mm-hmm.
It's very disturbing. I'd like to know who's controlling everyone.
Well, me too. And then RFK Jr. responded.
Okay. He says, the absurd attacks on Casey Means reveal just how far off course our healthcare conversations have veered and how badly entrenched interests, including Big Food and its industry-funded social media gurus, are terrified of change. Casey has excelled in every endeavor she has undertaken. She was president of her Stanford undergrad class, blah, 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 top performer in her surgical residency. Mm-hmm. She had the courage to leave traditional medicine because she realized her patients weren't getting better. So,
This is the money shot.
He goes on to say, the goal of MAHA is to reform the largest and most powerful industry in the United States. I have little doubt that these companies and their conflicted media outlets will continue to pay bloggers and other social media influencers to weaponize innuendo to slander and vilify Casey the same way they tried to defame me and President Trump.
So that's a pretty strong defense, and that came out right after this. So Nicole Shanahan was his vice presidential pick during his presidential run. She feels close to it.
Right,
she,
right.
Since I was not a huge fan of her, and I'm becoming one.
Yeah.
Just because she really seems to speak her mind and does not care.
I'm with you with that. I'm with you there.
The political dimensions of it. but this is kind of weird where he doesn't directly say, listen, I'm so sorry, Nicole, you know, there's something else going on here. And, you know, it's just a different game than maybe it looks like from the outside. And by the way, Surgeon General, who cares, right? but he says, oh, this is just entrenched interest. And I get it. Let me be very clear. Fighting the pharma and food companies is big business. This is hard.
Yeah.
This is hard. They fight dirty. They kill doctors. They kill kids. They play real dirty. And they're not going to accept defeat, because defeat could mean they get exposed for who they really are.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't just put them in prison. Like, we socially say, y'all need to be terminated and exterminated.
Right.
You know, or whatever, because it's that bad.
It is. And they play dirty. So they would kill people.
They do, but he sort of mentions, you know, it's a big, dirty fight, but he doesn't say, Nicole, we got this, trust me, or something. He says, I have little doubt that these companies and their conflicted media outlets will continue to pay bloggers. So he's implying that she's just sort of a paid asset of his opposition now, which is a very weird, like, that's a quick breakdown, don't you think, to go from...
Yeah, that kind of is.
Go from there to there.
So this was directly to her.
Well, it was in respect, came out just seconds afterwards. So, readers commenting, of course, Mary Tally Bowden.
Oh, she's excellent.
Going to put the bomb on that.
I've seen two patients with severe neurological issues following the COVID shots today.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Jancy says, pull the genetic shots. Nothing else is as important right now. And until you do, no one trusts anything you do. And Blue Duck Capital Partner says, why are we still feeding children mRNA?
Right.
Is the corruption that bad?
And Browse to Web says here, RFK Jr. hasn't said a peep about the mRNA jab since his appointment in the comments over here.
Mm-hmm.
So this is actually a really important point. These mRNA shots very simply ought to be pulled for children, because children have no harm from COVID.
That's right.
And the shots don't prevent them from spreading harm to, say, grandma, because they don't prevent transmission. They don't do anything. So it's, you never, ever, ever ethically subject a child to a treatment for which they have no illness currently and no benefit, but there are risks associated with that.
Right.
That's a zero on the ethical line.
Right.
That one's an easy one. That's
it
a dunk.
It seems easy.
That's like the hoop is 4 feet off the ground. Can you get the ball in there? I mean, this, why not?
Seriously.
No, seriously. Why do we not have this at this
point
in time?
I don't know. It's gross to me. It speaks so badly of our, you know, our country, the leaders in it, what their true intentions are. I don't think they care about anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the children should be, I think, if we were a caring society, if we were a successful society, if we were a society worth saving, we would be putting our children first.
We would.
And we would be trying to nourish them and make sure they had the best outcome possible.
Yeah. Joe Potter calls it a stealth maid service.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, so Here's how I put it. I forget when I put this up, February of this year. So the Trump admin was actually considering banning COVID vaccines for all age groups, right? And it turns out that now that we know a lot more about this, we find out that the Pfizer products in particular have extensive DNA contamination, particularly with the SV40 promoter and effector regions. They have DNA contamination. So even if you can't like wrestle your mind around the ethical consideration of forcing children to take a no benefit, all risk treatment, so granny feels a little less, you know, nervous in their presence or whatever the story is, at a minimum, you can use good manufacturing practices, GMP standards to say, oh, it's a contaminated product.
Right.
If you can make it without contamination, we'll reconsider it. Until then, it's off the market, because that's what we do with every and any contaminated product, whether it's lettuce with salmonella on it, or it's, you know, soda drink with some metal shavings in it. Contaminated products get pulled from the shelves. This is a no-brainer. This is easy.
That's right.
Cars have defect recalls all the time. The Pfizer shots are contaminated with DNA, which we think is causing a lot of the problems. Mm-hmm. This is not hard.
No,
this
it's is not easy. Hard. RFK Jr., do you hear that? It's not hard. It's easy.
Yeah.
You need to look at this.
This is easy.
I don't know who to talk to anymore.
I don't either. Well, that's what we're
who's
up
in
to.
Charge? Nobody so, knows.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. At any rate, Evie.
All right.
I think it's time to land this plane.
All right. Give me one quick sec here.
So while you're going there, I'll remind everybody that the Signal Hour is on Wednesdays and Fridays at 1 o'clock. This is what it looks like. If you want to come to Peak Prosperity, we have conversations like this pretty much all week long, and have regular content there for all of my followers and subscribers. We are a 100% subscriber funded operation. I don't do advertising. Incentives give you outcomes. I don't want any advertising polluting anything. So no advertising. We have a few affiliates we believe in. And so, yes, we have some affiliate relationships, but they're all products I use for sure and have tested out and use on a regular basis because they're great, great products like Gold Core, Peak Financial Investing, things like that. So come on by Peak Prosperity. I'd love to have you as a subscriber because, well, we need your support and we'd love to have your contributions. So, Evie, are you there?
Yeah, I am here. This is just a little piece by Thomas Merton, who I think is an incredible writer and thinker. And it's a little excerpt of his that says, "Do not depend on the hope of results. You may have to face the fact that your work will apparently be apparently worthless and even achieve no result at all, if not perhaps results opposite to what you expect. As you get used to this idea, you start more and more to concentrate not on the results, but on the value, the rightness, the truth of the work itself. You gradually struggle less and less for an idea and more for specific people. In the end, it is the reality of personal relationship that saves everything."
And with that, we're going to say adios, amigos. It's been so good to be here with everybody, and we will see you next Wednesday.
Have a wonderful weekend. Go out there, get in the garden, get your hands dirty. Tell us all about it next Wednesday.
All right, till then, signing off, everyone. Bye for now.